Mackenzie.
Lamar.
Well done. You got a favorite Muppet?
Okay. I think so. I don't want it to be like a cop out, but I think so because it's just what popped into my head when you asked me this is great. Gonzo. Like, I think
he's
Gonzo's
the obvious
the best.
Choice, right? He's got the most personality. He's the most
unique
looking.
He's like snarky, funny, smart. He also like, I just love the running shtick of you don't know what he is. It's just, and it's in every Muppet, anything, if you didn't already know this, he's a whatever, you know, and they just avoid, like, they don't know what he is. And so, I don't know, that always just cracked me up. I love Gonzo, especially I love Muppet Christmas Carol as well, and he's great in that.
Is he also, I forget, are him and Rizzo playing themselves in that too, or are they playing actual characters in that one?
Yeah, he's the narrator, though, is like what he's titled as, and he, because he does, he reads parts of the book. In A Christmas Carol, he reads like the source material as the narration. And so he's a little bit more of a character because he's reading the book. And then Rizzo's just like, silly. Yeah.
I love that they play themselves in this in the opening credits, just as themselves. And then I feel like Gonzo's almost the Deadpool of the Muppet universe. Like, he gets the most meta jokes where he can look at the screen. And Rizzo,
he's
too,
the
I
one
guess,
who breaks. But... Yeah, the two of them, they break the wall the most. So is Gonzo also your favorite then? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to come right out and say that I wasn't a big Muppets kid.
Me either.
I think it's because I blame it on the fact that I didn't really see a lot of the Muppet movies as a kid. Instead, my younger siblings watched Muppet Babies, so I thought that was my version of the Muppets. Was like
Muppet. I don't even know what you're saying.
TV show. It was on, I think, Nickelodeon. It was like whatever the
we didn't have cable
television on Nick is. You should try it sometime. Go back and see what you missed. But because of that, I was like, oh, the Muppets are stupid. I don't like them because I hadn't been exposed to the actual more grown up stuff. And to give the Hensons a lot of credit here. I think I've said multiple times on the pod that there was this weird spot where kids' movies were just kids' movies. And it wasn't until Pixar sort of figured out this formula that you can really make it enjoy. I want to give the Hensons their due because watching this and watching Christmas Carol, it's like, these are kids' movies, but there is plenty of enjoyment for adults in this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that this is, I learned a little bit more about Muppets in this watch because I did a little bit more research, because same as you, I was just not a big Muppet person other than the Muppet Christmas Carol, which has taken years to grow on me, by the way. Like, when I was a kid, I hated it, but it was my sister's favorite Christmas movie. So now I sort of associate it with her and it reminds me of my sister. It's like I've slowly come to love it because of my sister and that memory. But yeah, I was not a big Muppet kid. So we'll get a little bit more of an appreciation for them today, I think.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar, playing myself today.
Playing myself. Have you ever not played yourself? Side note on the
wall. I'm on IMDb. I have one credit on IMDb for a student film called Brobot that actually did go to some festivals around the country. It was like 30 minutes long. I played Nick.
How have we been doing this for a year? And this is for over a year. And this is the first time this nugget has come out. Everybody go look up Lamar on IMDb.
My one credit. I'm famous.
Your one credit. I need a credit on IMDb. Now I'm jealous. But we're going to have some fun today talking about another Fan Jan entry with Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah, my first time seeing this. All
same. Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know if you had seen it. Okay, well, this was a good Fan Jan request then, because neither of us had seen it, and that's pretty rare. But before we get into all the things we learned about the Muppets today and our fun facts about this movie, what are we drinking?
So yeah, as always, this is from at craftworld.wrld on Instagram. He promised me he was going to share the recipe this week in a photo. So that's his New Year's resolution.
Did he promise that, or did he say it's my New Year's resolution?
I guess it's as good a promise as any other New Year's resolution, which means not fucking much. But this is an ounce of white rum, an ounce of dark rum, half an ounce of ginger liqueur, and then a half ounce each of OJ, palm juice, and pineapple juice. Just shake it, strain it over ice. And did you put nutmeg on top of yours as recommended?
I did. Well, he put the nutmeg out so that I would not forget. So I didn't forget. I did put it on there. Did you?
Okay. I did not have nutmeg in the cabinet, so I used cinnamon. I feel like that's a close enough substitute. Skylar's going to be so pissed. He's like,
I was going to say, I have no idea, actually, but I feel like he's going to be triggered. Yeah.
Well, either way, you can also garnish this with a piece of fruit if you want. I think he said an orange or a cherry. I munched a banana, so that will be my garnish. I'm going to place that
I'm going to cover my beverage with my
Skylar is going to be disgusted.
He's like, he ruined my drink, so now I'm not posting it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And this one is just called Walk the Plank because we're covering up at Treasure Island. So, and they
pirates, man.
Yeah, they do have somebody walk the plank early on, right? Or am I making that up? I forget.
I don't think they
somebody
do.
Actually walks the
but
plank
they should
in this
have.
Movie. Yeah,
it do would they? Make sense. I don't remember. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, cheers. Oh, I actually, so speaking of garnishes, I gave it a little umbrella.
Ooh.
And a little skull. So, you know, just little funsies. So cheers.
Cheers.
I was like, it needs to feel islandy, you know? So here we are. And I did take a photo of it. So maybe y'all will see it. I don't know. Well, it's delish, I will say. I don't know if I can taste the nutmeg because it hasn't melted in there yet. So you might not be missing out, but it's delish without it. I'll say that.
Nice.
All right, homies, let's talk about some Muppets. As we said, not a lot of experience with the Muppets myself. I think it's this and Muppet Christmas Carol, really, and seen like a couple, I don't know, episodes in passing of things.
Saw the Christmas special last year, which is a different thing than the Christmas Carol, and that was still enjoyable. It was more like a musical thing. It was
yeah.
Like a bottle episode, but
I think my thing that I learned with this is it's such an art form. Like I don't mean to say this. It's probably so obvious and people are going to be like, duh. And I don't mean to say this in any kind of judgmental way, but I did not realize how much of an art form this would be yeah. for the performers. You know what I mean? Like, I just didn't take it that seriously. I guess I think it's easy to not take puppets seriously, mm-hmm. which is obviously not fair because of the effort and, you know, writing and performance. And like, they take the performances so seriously. And I think that's the thing that I was pleasantly surprised and interested in. And so it's a really interesting, I have a few lists of like who the performers are, but you're going to know them mostly for Muppet stuff because that's their passion. So it's really interesting if you look into, I won't go too far into it, but if you look into Jim Henson and how he came up with the Muppets and like how passionate he was, I mean, it was his brainchild. And he was a really cool, interesting guy, and he really took it really seriously. So it's interesting that it's like yielded all these pieces of art going forward. And it's, you know, the art form carries on because of his work. So it's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort, I think, that's why not a lot of people have done this or attempted this mm-hmm. even of making films with both humans and puppets, because maybe they just don't take it seriously. Yeah. But I think the coolest thing, especially watching this and Christmas Carol so recently, is it make you forget that they're puppets at times.
Yeah.
Like, you know they're puppets. You can see at times, you know, a hand mm-hmm. in Kermit's head moving around. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
The best thing these movies do, because to your point, it's an art form, they make you suspend disbelief enough, and everyone yeah. on screen is taking it so seriously and totally understands the gig. And then yeah. the little thing I noticed was the way they shoot it. So many of the shots are shot down low at the puppet height,
at
with the
level.
Human characters just kind of towering over them in the background. Yeah. And it's, you're in that world. It doesn't feel like you're watching a puppet show. It feels like you're watching a movie, which you are. So
yeah, 100%. And I think like you hit the nail on the head. It's that you kind of move into this world and you just think that everybody blends is really cool. So anyway, the one we're talking about today, again, is Muppet Treasure Island, which was 1996. It did come after A Christmas Carol, if you were curious. And this was rated pretty highly. I don't think quite as high as A Christmas Carol, but pretty highly. 6.9 out of 10. For IMDb, and then 71% from critics, but 77% for audiences. So pretty well received. And it was directed by Brian Henson. So obviously has also done the Christmas Carol Muppets, as well as a bunch of the other Muppets, is primarily what you're going to know him for. And I think he did like the Muppets Take Manhattan, was his kind of brainchild and stuff like that. So he directed this. The writing and the story is like a massive team effort. So those are the source material is Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, if you didn't know, the novel itself. And then we've got a bunch of screenplay writers, Jerry Jewell, Kirk R. Thatcher. They do all Muppet things, both of them. And then James V. Hart, who has done some other non-Muppet things that you may know, like August Rush, for example, which if you haven't seen, is a really beautiful movie. And they also did Hook, actually. He was one of our Hook writers. But I wanted to pause here and talk about the book because, of course, I do.
Of course
I'm
you
a nerd.
Do.
All of right. course
I'm gonna,
I do.
I'll be back.
Okay. Rude. Well, I'm going to talk to the rest of y'all anyway. Okay. So I loved this book when I was a kid. This was one of the first books that my grandfather gave me to read. He didn't give it to me until till many years later, but it was one of the first ones he gave me to read at his house to keep me from bothering him. So I blew through it, and this is his copy of it. And I'm going to try and show y'all the art. So this is actually a reprint in the 70s. Okay. Of the 1945 edition of this book, and it's in really good shape, and it has some like beautiful artwork and stuff in here, and just cute little family fun. This was my grandpa's like tag in his book of his books that he owned.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I added mine below it where we match. So this is one of my little nostalgic books, so y'all have to sit through me talking about my grandpa. I love y'all. But I also wanted to show y'all the cool things in the book, like the illustrations, if you're watching this on video. So this is like the full island map of Muppet Treasure Island, basically. Treasure Island.
Do we know that Muppet Treasure Island and regular Treasure Island have the same topography?
I think it's the same layout. You know, they're true to the source material, usually, in the Muppets. I will say they did change a lot of this, but they did a pretty good job. They actually were originally going to write Jim Hawkins' character, which is the character, as Rizzo, and Gonzo as Jim and Hawkins. But then they kept the source material because they thought that would be better. And this is Jim Hawkins, speaking of, with Captain Long John Silver, which is very nice. Cool because he would hang out in the galley with him. And like you see this in the movie as well, that he like genuinely liked him and loved him and things like that. So anyway, I just love it. It also starts with a really cool poem for the hesitating purchaser about why you should buy this book and read this story.
That was always in there?
Yeah, it was in the... So fun fact about the book, it was actually published in, I want to say it was 11 parts in a youth magazine when it was first published. And then it was not published as a full book together as one until I want to say 1911. And that edition had the poem. Okay. And actually Robert Louis Stevenson wrote this for his kids. So it was like they had a particularly rough winter where they had to be inside and the kids were going a little crazy. And so he started writing this book for the kids. And this poem is kind of leading to like, this is why you're going to love this. It's just so entertaining and exciting. And he's actually known for writing a letter to his publishers after this of like, I'm sad to put this story to bed. You know, this is such a fun story and my kids loved it and everything. And so anyway, it's just a really special piece of source material that I think that the Muppets did a really good job with in this instance.
My question, thanks for sharing all that. I was unaware of 90% of what you said, but my question is, why didn't the Muppets just do this for every fucking book? Like, why not just run this back every 2 years, do a different, because I know they started doing more original stories in the aughts, and I didn't see those. I don't know how those landed, but I didn't understand why they wouldn't just do this every couple years.
Yeah, because A Christmas Carol was awesome. And same thing, they did the source material great justice with that one as well. And the commitments, again, to the performances and just keeping it really sincere. And I don't know. They actually talked about doing a King Arthur one. That was almost what this one was going to be. But I'm surprised they never did it. Like, do it later.
Personally, I have not a ton of background information to, you know, give evidence to this. My personal theory is like, it's sort of a Brian Henson thing. Cause this one is 6 years after Jim's death. And I think this was Brian's big shot. And apparently he was kind of a mess on the set. And again, I don't know how much of that is grief. It's 6 years later, but he was partying and would not show up on days. The second director had to step in for him. So I just wonder how much of that sort of Muppet and Henson legacy was kind of on his shoulders and he just couldn't get it done. I'm not saying that's what happened, but just based on what I heard about this movie, potentially.
Yeah, maybe they just couldn't trust him to execute that specific vision over and over. But I will say, again, they are very well received despite that. And you could, in theory, get another director, I think, to do this with other stories. I got a whole wall of them, Muppets. If you want some recommendations, I'm happy to submit them for a
Muppet
consideration.
Twilight.
Not a Muppet Twilight. Please, God. Unless they fix all the aspects of Twilight. No, thank you.
They can have Miss Piggy play... Kristen Stewart, and they'd have like the same amount of facial change. Like,
I'm convinced that Miss Peggy can play anything, to be fair. Like, she could do it, somehow pulls off any character. She's great. Oh, well, speaking of, so let's get into the cast. We're going to go, as we always say, attempt to go very quick through this, but who knows? Mr. Tim Curry, like I say that and I immediately want to fangirl about Tim Curry for 5 minutes straight. Yeah. But Mr. Long John Silver, obviously incredible performer, does Rocky Horror and Clue and things like that that we've talked about a bunch of times. I won't go on and on and on, but he's fucking awesome. Period.
He's also supposed to be the Joker on the Batman animated series. He did 3 or 4 episodes of that.
Yeah.
And then apparently bronchitis. Well, he had bronchitis, which sucks, but like it did give us that legendary Mark Hamill that kept coming back for all the Batman video games and things like that. So no complaints.
Which I have to say is like pretty great. So yeah. I'm not upset about it, but I love any excuse to listen to Tim Curry though too. So there's that. Billy Connolly, another guy that I could listen to a lot. I fucking love his accent. He does awesome voice work, actually, and he plays Billy Bones. He has been in Pocahontas. Like, you'll recognize his voice, I guarantee you, from Pocahontas, for example. But as far as live action, he did Boondock Saints, which
your favorite
movie.
I
fucking love that movie.
It's a guilty pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
It's so good. Like, we should do that absolutely. One on the pod. Yeah, it's a good fucking time. Anyway. Kevin Bishop plays Jim Hawkins, going through puberty, this poor fella, but he has done The Spanish Apartment, was the thing he's most known for. He hasn't done a lot that he's known for, and I wonder if that's partially because of this movie, where they're like, I don't know.
Like, I feel bad for the kid, because, yeah, you said he's going through puberty, and first time seeing this, when he started singing, I went, why is he singing so high? It felt like it was almost, like, out of his range. I'm like, why didn't they tell him to drop it one? But that's because it's dubbed in. Because his voice was changing, so they used older cuts, and it doesn't really match his body and his face. But it's not a bad performance.
It leaves a little to be desired from a singing standpoint. You can tell that he's like struggling with his voice, and there's puberty issues at hand, and it's very, very high. Yeah, it feels weird. But he does a good job overall. But I think when he sings in this, it kind of takes away from other things. It's a little distracting, I think, is what I would say. The voice itself distracts you from what he's singing. Like what the point is, I think. And so maybe that didn't help him. But anyway, David Goles. So these are the Muppet performers, just to be clear. And I'm just going to list their names because they all play multiple Muppets, to be fair. So David Goles, Steve Whitmore, Frank Oz, John Henson. These are like the core performers who do a bunch of these. And I think what's fun about this is reading about it. They take it so seriously. Like it's their performance. It's their puppet. And Frank Oz, for example, had, you know, some scheduling conflicts. So he did do the voices that he always does, but they were, like you said, they were dubbed in after. And another performer had to do his actual puppeteering. And he had whole conversations with them about it. Like, these are my characters. This is how they would move. Like, again, they took it so serious. And me, like, just naive me, would have thought, well, you know, whoever can go in and puppet that for you. And he's like, no, absolutely not. Here is who my characters are. So I thought that was pretty cool, actually. The score is by Mr. Hans Zimmer. What a gem. What a beautiful
Pirates
score.
Pirates of the Caribbean setting himself up for success here.
I mean, so good. And you can hear notes that you're like, that's nice. That's nice. and it does. It gives you like the, I don't know, on the open sea kind of thing, you know, vibes to the music. I really enjoy the score as well. But plot summary is very simple this time, y'all. And I think it's pretty clear from everything about this what it is. But to be clear, the Muppets set sail in search of treasure with Jim Hawkins and Long John Silver.
They should have just said, like, four plot, look at back cover of Treasure Island and replace with Muppets. That should be the plot summary.
That's literally it. Although I will say they changed some key things. Like Jim Hawkins is not an orphan in the book, for example. I mean, his father dies, but like he's not an orphan. He just chooses to go on this adventure. And so anyway, so there's some things that change a little bit. But on the whole, the core story is, yes, very similar, including the bond between him and Long John Silver. So it was interesting to me like that I kept thinking of course, the like Long John Silver's chain. Where you're like, because you know it's a food chain, so it kind of makes sense. But you're like, he's kind of the bad guy, and we named a whole thing after him. But he's also a little bit not the bad guy, and I think that's what's cool about his character, especially more so in the book, because he's really smart. He teaches Jim Hawkins a lot about not just sailing, but like life, and this kind of like. you know how in Pirates of the Caribbean they say like the Pirate's Code, you know, it is mm-hmm. like this pirate honor. It's a different type of honor, but he teaches him about some of those things, and their bond is very real, and he really does care about him. So he's not entirely a villain. I think that's what's kind of fun about
his character. Without that, the story would be a lot less interesting, because you even like, I hadn't read the book since middle school, but even watching this, you know, they have that line about the man with the one leg. So, you know, that he's evil, quote unquote, but the dynamic between the two of them and how he has these moments of sort of feeling and expressing emotion, and you're not sure whether to buy it or not. Like, I think the movie and the book work better because of that dynamic, as opposed to just a straight up, you've been betrayed, we're pirates.
Yeah, anybody like one dimensional like that isn't that interesting, to be fair. Yeah, totally. And I think Tim Curry does a great job of that, because I think he's like the perfect person to play this, because he is so charming. And that's exactly what this character was. Like, Long John Silver was very charming in the books, and you don't know exactly who he's going to end up being in this story at first, and I think he gives you in his performance in this film, he gives you that as well, where you're like, I feel like I know that something's gonna happen here, but is it? Because again, he's so charming and he's so likable, and all these
charming
things.
Creep is his MO. That is like Tim Curry to a T, from Rocky Horror all the way up to today. Like, we just watched Scary Movie 2 last night randomly. We're just like, we want to throw something stupid on, and he's in that. And again, just creepy as hell, more creepy in that one. But still, you're just like, God, he's funny. It hasn't aged as well. The first one's pretty good. The first one still has aged well compared.
I saw the first one when it came out, and it was like kind of funny, but I never saw
it. It's because the first one is basically a straight up, not shot for shot, but it's like scene for scene of Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. It mashes them up. The second one is where they're like, we're just going to parody everything.
Every horror movie
ever.
And
it goes off the rails, and there's a few laughs, but it's not as good.
And I love, like, I'll watch anything that Tim Curry does, and I didn't even know he was in that, so that's interesting. But yeah, he's great. My favorite, well, maybe not my favorite, but one of my favorite, to your point, creepy charming that he did, is the Three Musketeers, where he's Cardinal Richelieu.
Yeah, he's real good in that.
Oh, good. Like, I want to go watch that right now. Anyway, so good. Okay, couple production fun facts, and then we're going to get into, like, talking this gem out. So it made a good amount of money. Again, for like a Muppet movie, you're like, damn, how many people are going to go see this? A good number, because the budget was $5 million, and they made $47.2 million on this one. And I think what's fun too is it like had a little bit of lore around it when it came out, because Spam sued them. Did you read about that?
A little bit. It was something to do with the pig, right? The character, not
pig character, who's like a pagan tribal character, and they were upset that they were going to be associated with that, and that they would associate that with Spam, like the company Spam, and it was like disparaging their brand or whatever. So they sued them over it, and Muppet Production won. I don't know who was like the plaintiff or whatever. Whoever they sued for it, I guess the studio ended up winning. And the quote was like, you'd think they would want to be associated with a pure ham product. Like that. And I just thought that was so funny, of them being like, we know your ham isn't real, like, why don't you like this, you know, this correlation. But the joke was like, lawsuit was Spam versus Spam.
Spam, that was the name of the lawsuit. That's funny.
Well, that was the like name that they gave it. I don't think it was the legal, like, okay, in the news headlines it was Spam versus Spam. And so but anyway, I just thought that was so funny. I was like, really, you're gonna sue over a Muppet movie? Like, really? Very.
You said the thing about a $5 million budget, and when you think about what we talked about before of how damn good all these performers are, and it's like, there's no CGI, obviously, there's no animation, this is just a bunch of people,
all real effects,
you know, it's all manual labor basically. And so the fact that you could do that on what is sounds like a really low fucking budget, like, that's pretty cool.
I think that that's like the name of the game with the Jim Henson Productions in general, of like, it's just like scrappy, you know, production value. And Jim Henson was always like, you know, he made those Muppets by hand. I mean, when he very first made them, of course, made them by hand. And he, you know, and he actually performed them on the early, I think it was the first episode. Maybe it wasn't. I think it was the first episode of Saturday Night Live. that he was on there. And it was, it's very interesting. If you watch Saturday Night, actually the biopic about Lorne Michaels and, well, really the production of Saturday Night Live, one, that's a really good movie. And two, Jim Henson makes an appearance because he's being so adamant about, and he looks exactly like him. And he's being so adamant about how the puppets are portrayed. He's like, no, they have like, they have this personality and this is the way they move. And like, these are my puppets. And you can just see how passionate it was, he was about it, and how important it was to him that they be properly presented. And I just think it's so cool that he has built this whole universe with them. And again, was really scrappy about it.
That's awesome. Yeah. He wants to protect the brand.
Protect the brand. Exactly. Well, speaking of the brand here is all these core characters that we love. The, you know, we wait a quite a long time before we see some of our favorites, like the Kermits and the Miss Piggies of the world. But we have, like we said, Gonzo and Rizzo kind of like pulling us through all this. And I really liked the dynamic between Gonzo, Rizzo, and Jim Hawkins. I thought that was like a really good rewrite. As we said, they rewrote that to work those in. I thought that was a really good rewrite of that little trio. And they make a lot of references, like self-references to their group and that they are not human. And like, they get the door closed on them one time. They're like, okay, I guess the humans want to hang out, I guess, like not us and no rats and whatever that guy is, you know? And so I just love that little group dynamic. I think they're really cute as this little, like, I don't know, orphan trio kind of.
Yeah. Do you want to throw down a spoiler warning for this 30-year-old film?
Well, it has been a minute, folks, but if you haven't seen it, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
If you haven't seen it, I'm sorry that we spoiled that somebody gets a door slammed in their face. That might ruin the movie for you.
It's really tragic. You know, it's like an emotional moment. And so I do apologize. But yeah, I think this, like we said, the source material is, it's pretty close to accurate. It kicks us off with a bang, I think, at the end. Well, like we get this very, you know, intro to these core characters again, working in this, you know, in pub kind of thing. And then we see this black spot thing, this attack on Billy Connolly's character, Billy Bones, where you know that he's been a part of this former crew and they're coming after him and he's being attacked and the inn is on fire and shit is going down.
Explosions are awesome in that scene. For practical effects, they do not have to go as hard as they do on Muppet movies sometimes. And they go hard. And those explosions look great.
Yeah. They're committed to the bit, man, the whole time. I, you know, and it's funny you say that. Like, I think that their C effects, same thing. Like, you're just, it, you buy the whole thing. You buy that there was this, like you said, you, the suspension of disbelief is made real by these effects because you're like, yeah, that was like a real fucking explosion and a little battle in an inn. And it was, you know, pretty hardcore. And they all come out of it, you know, the little trio comes out of it kind of unscathed, but you know, Billy Bones and all of that basically says like, guys, you got to go get the treasure. And he's like dying this very dramatic death. And,
first person to die in a Muppet film, I think, right? Like, I don't know. And last maybe only
I feel like, yeah. I mean, cause there's somebody's allusions to people who are dead, but I don't think you see people die very often.
That scene's very funny when he's like taking his time to die. He's always like, give me Jim. Like they play it up. Rizzo says, this is a kid's movie.
This is a kid's movie. Yeah. I will say, I think maybe that's an allusion to the book because it does take him multiple strokes and a heart attack to die in the book. He has two strokes and then a heart attack over several days. So it's not immediate. And I think it's 2 days, 3 days. So, I mean, I think it's kind of like making fun of the source. That's one of the things I want to say. Like they make fun of the source material in, I think, really like funny ways where they're like, this is kind of getting dragged out a little bit, Billy. Like, can we wrap that up? It's a good one. It's a cute scene. I also think in this scene and in every other scene after, I love a good, I have it in my notes, literally. I love a good Muppet roast. They all just like are so snarky and roast each other. Gonzo, Rizzo, all the other characters. And there's this like back and forth witty repartee. And I read somewhere, I don't know where it was, but they were like, the writing in this one wasn't as good as, you know, A Christmas Carol or what have you. And I mean, I would maybe agree with that, but I just still think it has so many great little one-liners there, these references, like boldly going where no man has gone before. All these just little nuggets for you like that's catchy. And he's like, oh, that's catchy. Where did that come from? You know, and you're just like, I love all these little, again, like you said, nuggets for the adults, but this like concept for the kids.
I like when they go to see Fozzie, I forget his character's name, but when they see Fozzie and they're like, you'll finance it, you'll finance this trip. And he goes, of course, what are rich half-wit sons for? That's more relevant now than ever, you know?
And that, again, that's like another reference to the book where the person who funds this is really kind of privileged, inexperienced, like no reason for them to go on this adventure kind of thing. And so, yeah, I love that they're making fun of society, source material, each other over and over again throughout. And he's funny because he has the like, what is it, Mr. Bird? Or is it Mr. Birdie? Who's the Bilbo, imaginary friend?
Bilbo.
Mr. Bilbo?
Bimbo.
Bimbo. Mr. Bimbo. We knew we were going to get there. But yeah, we got the little imaginary friend on his finger the whole time. And you're like, it took me a minute actually to kind of notice it. And then by the end, you're like, oh, he has a problem.
He's not well.
But Frank Oz didn't like that. And he said it over and over again. He was like, that's not even funny. I don't even get it. Like, I don't understand. And then supposedly by the end of actually recording it, he liked the joke and it was one of his favorite bits. But he didn't like it at first.
I'm with Frank on this one. At the beginning of the film, I was like, this isn't that funny. Like, but by the end, when they really, for me, the more you lean into a bad bit, the funnier it gets to me. So like later in the film when they're tied up and his finger's like, quote unquote, doing nothing about it, that to me is when it starts getting funny, is the later iterations of the joke.
I think that's what happened to him too. Like, if you just lean into the bit after a while, you start to think it's funny. But definitely at first I was like, I'm sorry, what? Wait, what? Because you don't get it at first. But I think that's the only one like that. The rest of them are pretty witty, straightforward jokes. But like that's a slow burn for sure.
The only other one that like folks might find questionable, I still found myself chuckling at it. Again, shout out to my sister Jordan, who is blind. But the visually challenged bit in this, I could see how people nowadays might look back and be like, we probably shouldn't have made those jokes, but there's some pretty good stuff in there, all the misunderstandings and miscommunication.
But you know, I guess it was progress to like call it out, like don't say that, you know. So I guess we were doing great for what, 96, whatever it was. So yeah, there's lots of those like funny little jokes I have in here multiple times. I just love the Rizzo Gonzo snark, you know, their sarcasm and their snarkiness is so fun. But then they go onto the boat. They're going to go on this adventure. They got the map. It's a whole thing. And Mr. Tim Curry enters the chat. And I just like immediately was like, Tim Curry, literally in all caps in my notes. I should send you all my notes someday. I'll have to screenshot them for a story or something. It's like Tim Curry in all caps. I was so excited. And I immediately was like, there's just nobody who laughs like him. You know, it just, I love him so much. He has this like deep, not like quite maniacal, but definitely a little bit evil laughter. And it really, funnily enough, with the book thing, it really reminds me of my grandpa, because my grandpa was, quick sidebar, a relatively well-known opera singer, and he had a very deep voice, an incredible, actually, I have a picture of him somewhere up here, but anyway, a beautiful deep voice. He was a baritone. And he had this incredible laugh that he would do. And like, he wasn't a super silly kind of guy, but that was the thing that he would do to the kids, to me and my sister. He would do this like, like really deep.
Did he throw his head back the way Tim Curry does a great head back evil laugh?
Yeah, he does the head back. And he, and like, but the thing that I noticed about him is like, you saw his whole body puff up when he did it. It was like, it came from his whole body every time he did it. Anyway, I just, every time I hear Tim Curry laugh in this, it, one, is just an incredible laugh, but it also reminds me of my grandpa again. So I love it.
It's just the thing I wrote down was all, not just Tim Curry, but all of the live action cast. And it's the right amount of live action actors versus puppets.
The ratio is solid,
yes. But all of them, again, understood the assignment. There is the proper amount of hamming it up while still taking it seriously. I think, and granted, I might have seen one of the newer Muppet movies, but any of these similar things recently, it feels like they almost are just more concerned with how many famous people can we put in, and let's have as many cameos as possible, and then write
the new
jokes
ones for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Referencing those real life people or other movies they've been in. Whereas this is like, no, this is about the story. And then we're putting these famous actors in here to help serve the story. We're not making a bunch of jokes about Tim Curry being in Rocky Horror Picture Show or anything like that. It's just, he's there doing a job. So I think this is the right amount of all of those things.
I agree. And I think he said too, he was like, this role was one of my favorite roles that he ever did. He said he loved this role of Captain Long John Silver. He thought it was such an interesting, unique character. He liked the way they produced it and told the story of Treasure Island. They gave him a Muppet in his own likeness at the end of the movie because of how much he loved the Muppets. And I just think it's such an indicator too of like, and Michael Caine did this as well, of these like truly professional actors who come into this stage, this performance with just sincerity and commitment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it works without that. And he's so committed to the bit. You know, he is like, he is this character. These Muppets are real. And like, imagine the suspension of disbelief on a set where you can see the people puppeting them. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And like the commitment to that. I just think it goes such a long way. His performance is incredible. And again, it reminded me of Michael Caine just being like, you are 100% a real person in front of me. And it also blows your mind how these specific Muppets who have very specific personalities and shapes and designs to them can plug into all these different characters, you know, mm-hmm. in a totally different story. And it just makes you feel like they're so versatile. That was the thing that I really noticed in this one. I mean, I think I had gotten very used to a Muppet Christmas Carol, but that's one of the things that I really noticed in this film of like, they're so versatile in the way that they can plug into any story.
And it's, I think part of it that helps the live actors in this is just the total immersion, not just them as mm-hmm. actors, like giving themselves mm-hmm. over to, like you said, this is real, this is really happening. But mm-hmm. when you look at some of the shots in this, another way that they get you to suspend that disbelief is just the sheer amount of puppets in one scene. When you look at some of the musical numbers, there's so many operators on the set at once controlling, and there's all these things in the background happening, and there's stuff in the foreground. And when you have that around you, I'm sure that makes it a little bit easier of just like, yeah, I'm in the shit. Yeah. Let's do this.
Well, yeah. And like you said, like the real effects and it not being CGI'd and all of that, I think makes such a big difference. You know, they had the boats on, you know, and it was a studio lot kind of thing, but it was like fully filled with water, and they had hydraulics, like controlling the boats and making them move and like making, again, like you said, I'm immersed in this thing that feels pretty as real as it can feel, I think, at that point, and really committing to the environment as much as the characters.
I think you respect this more. I almost think of this, I know that it's not live theater, but with the amount of manual and practical effects being used, that's what I kind of have the same respect and appreciation.
Very similar.
It's like watching a Rube Goldberg device go off. It's like all these things have to be perfectly done in order to make mm-hmm. this 30-second scene look good. So yep. I had that same sort of appreciation for when you go see live theater when I was watching this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mechanics of it all are very similar, you know? The way it's produced is very similar in that you have to build these sets that are very real and you have to operate them in real time. They were so committed. I mean, they thought the boat was moving like a boat moves. Mm-hmm. So they gave everyone anti-nausea medication on one of the shooting days because they thought they would get sick from motion sickness. Yeah. And apparently everybody was so sleepy they couldn't shoot. And Tim Curry was like, turned to Brian Ensign and was like, I'm going to kill you. And so he was like, I'm half asleep. They just couldn't shoot. And they had to wait till
they
were off.
So fully committed that they gave the pills to the Muppets too. They're just like, and one for you, Kermit, and one for you, Fozzie.
And you see the little hand.
One of the scenes that was like, when I said that thing before about the appreciating it, such a small thing, but when they go to sleep and you see their three characters' eyes, and then they close, but then you see the pig's eyes like in the back, appearing in the dark. We've seen that a million times, mostly in animated pictures, right?
Yeah.
But this being this practical thing, it's like thinking about, okay, they probably have to have the puppets facing backward. And then when the lights go out, they turn them around. And it's such a simple thing. But again, the choreography to make that happen, and then the lights come up and they attack. Just, it was really cool to think about what was happening on the set while they were doing this.
Yeah, it reminds me of Hook in that way. And it's funny that it's like pirate-esque. It's just, it feels like the production experience is very accurate, or as accurate as it can be to the story that you're trying to tell, you know? And I think they did a really good job of that. And I think like you're more engaged with the story. The one bit of feedback I will say is this gave me such an appreciation for the Muppets and for the performances, but I do think it drags a bit in the middle.
Yes.
And so it lost me a couple of times where, like, I did watch this at home and I normally try, especially during the pod, to really focus and take notes and things like that. And I zoned out a couple of times. Like, I think I probably missed things a little bit because I was a little bit in the middle, like, okay. And then, like, the Cabin Fever song would bring me back. You know what I mean? Like, it's something really engaging would snap me back.
I think
into
one
it.
More song in there would have been helpful to break up that middle section.
I agree. I agree. But I will say, of the songs, while we're there, they're so fun. But I think the Cabin Fever song is so fucking funny. Like, if you really go back and just go back and watch that one scene, guys, if you don't want to watch the whole movie, just go back and watch that one scene. Put on captions, read the lyrics, and it's just, it's so funny that all the references in that Cabin Fever scene and how committed they are, and also how you see them, like, snap out of it, right? Like, it feels like this real hallucination of, like, we've been on the ocean for days, we are fucking losing it, you know, but they do it in this really funny way. And I think that that song I remember, like, bringing me back. I was like, okay, I've been a little zoned out. This is a good one.
That one's up there. I think my other favorite, I just love the irony of when there's been the betrayal and then Long John is singing the pirate
song. And he's like, this is my one number.
Again, Tim Curry fucking makes this movie, but and when he's encouraging them to, like, sing, and so he's just orchestrating this whole thing. But I love the irony of them describing how honorable they are as pirates, but then talking about all the terrible things they do and just sort of, like, going back and forth.
Pirate code,
they're trying to convince themselves, but they're saying all the bad things. It's a great, great lyric, set of lyrics there.
It's almost like, and I'm in sales, guys, so bear with me, but it's almost like a really good sales pitch from somebody that you know is a smarmy sales guy, you know, where you're like, I'm kind of, like, with it, you know, like, I kind of get it. You're really selling me on this. But he's also, saying things that you know are bad. But I put in the notes, and this is, I think, true of arguably every movie ever. Villain songs are the best. Like, villains get the best songs. That's why Disney has a villains soundtrack standalone, because they just get the best songs. And his song is so fun. And, like you said, all the references, but how he's so committed to the physicality of it too, how they lift him and move him and, like, just his full performance. And it's like, it kind of throws you back a little bit to his Rocky Horror days where you're like, there he is, you know, like, he's really leaned in and committed to the bit. And he's just, you can tell, I think it, like, exudes from him that he's just having a great time.
Yeah.
I think, like, he as an actor is having a great time playing this role, and it really comes through in the music.
Yeah, 110% agree on that. I think that the betrayal scene is probably where it picks back up again, with the exception of that Cabin Fever song. Like, we know where we're going with this. Even if you hadn't read the book, you can kind of predict where this plot is going to go. We know that betrayal's coming. I found it, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but did you get big time Pennywise vibes when he drops his crutch and then he's down low over the boat railing and he's like, Jim, can you grab my crutch? I'm like, oh, this is, like, straight out, like, Pennywise, like, down
didn't,
in the sewer.
But now I do that you're saying it. Yeah, that really works. Really works. Good little allusion, you know, to Pennywise. No, I think that's so true too. And again, he has that, like, layer of charm to him. So you're kind of like, you could buy this totally. You would buy what this guy is selling you, because he's smooth enough to do it for sure.
This would have only been, I think, a few years after that TV series of it came out. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was intentional, maybe it wasn't. The other line that stood out to me that I think was a direct reference was really sweet, where Kermit says, I knew your father, Jim, he was a good man. I was like, oh, so he's talking, Jim. I think that was their way of, like, him writing something into the script for his dad. So.
Right. Yeah. And I think, like, the other, Kermit is most closely associated with Jim Henson, but a lot of people think that the dog is more a Jim Henson character, like who he actually was. And so you'll
Rolf.
Yeah, Rolf. And so they didn't have him speak in this because
was he
they
in it? I didn't even.
Yeah, he has a very brief appearance at the beginning.
Okay.
And they were saying that they didn't have him speak because they, like, weren't ready. So I do think there's some real grief still people happening in the production of this film, like you said about Brian, because he couldn't bear to hear that Muppet talk. Like, they couldn't give him lines, you know. They were like, well, that's Jim, you know, that's Dad. And so I think that's basically verifies what you were thinking of. This was a hard throwback for them after his passing. And, but I think they do put those nuggets in there that are special allusions to him in, okay, in the film.
Yeah. That explains, because I watching it, I went, I thought there were more Muppet, like main character, yeah, Muppets than this, from like remembering again, the Muppet Babies. I was like, we're missing somebody. Like there's Fozzie, there's Miss Piggy. Mm-hmm. And I was counting on my fingers. I'm like, there's at least one more. So that explains that. Okay.
And what's, I can't, it, well, it's the chef guy, the cook guy. And I can't remember if his name is just chef or cook,
Swedish,
or whatever.
He's the Swedish chef.
Swedish chef. That's right. It's chef something. Yeah, I love that he comes in at the end, like at the roast, you know, and they're like, how else do you think we were going to get him in this movie? Like, they were like, we have to try to work him in.
But that's a plot hole, because literally Tim Curry's character at the beginning was the
cook.
They could have, yeah, just had him there. So,
well, he's moved on to full pirate levels. You know, he's coming to his own at this point. We need a backfill.
Yes,
and this,
yes,
guy's got a cook. But yeah, I love that he's, I mean, real quick, I think that that's such a great call out, is he's this unassuming cook. You know, it's why his character works so well as this person, mm-hmm, that could pass as just being a normal crew member. You know, he's just the cook. No big deal. Why would you suspect him? And yeah, it turns out that he's the most piratey of all. You know,
I was going to say, going all the way back to the very beginning when we were talking about favorite Muppets, I don't even know if this Muppet is in other movies, but after this movie, it might be that like goat looking Muppet who's kind of the doofus of the pirate group.
Who's fucking like high, I think.
Every
line. I think
line,
he's supposed to be high.
Every single line killed me. I love when the betrayal happens.
What is his name?
I didn't look at the credits, and I don't know if he's in other Muppet movies, but when they find the empty treasure chest and then they all turn on Long John and they're like, go give him the black spot. And he just walks and he goes, this is for you. Like the way he delivers that.
That was a good impression. Thank good
you,
job.
Thank you. He just killed me every time he opened up his mouth. So
he was very funny, but I thought every time he spoke, though, I was like, he's high, right? Like, he's got to be high. And but I do love when they give him the black spot, and then Tim Curry just shames them all for doing it and is like, how very dare you? This is on the Bible, you know, all these, yeah, things. And I love that he shames them into being like, okay, just kidding. Please be our leader again.
Yeah.
And he goes, and like, to your point, he goes up and hugs him, and he's like, I'm sorry. You know, like, it's just
a little 5-minute bit of like betrayal, intimidation, yeah, forgiveness, and now we're back to, yeah, where we started. Like, that's a, yeah, great way to add 5 minutes to a movie.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, then you get over to the, you know, the Miss Piggy and Kermit bit as well. Is always, they're always a fun dynamic. They always have such a silly, funny relationship, but I love, yeah, that by the end of it they're hanging upside down together and, you know, trying not to fall. And
the
I
transition
love how,
I'm sorry, but the transition real quick from them singing, there's like a love song happening, but then it cuts to them hanging upside down and her screaming. That, yeah, really in like
the stark contrast, yeah,
wail of hers is just hilarious. That hard cut from the love song to that is great.
It's so good. And then I love that they change his eyes, you know, when they feel like they're gonna fall, like, yeah, just like you said, to the effect of like the Muppets themselves and how they're mm-hmm, built and designed for the different shots, you know, they change his eyes, which I think is a little bit, you know, kind of rare for Kermit, right? He always has one presentation on the whole, and he looks, you know, he looks like he's terrified he's gonna fall off this cliff. And yes, her voice and her freakouts and screams are incredible, which is, I think, so made so much more fun for me by the fact that it's Frank Oz doing the voice of Miss Piggy, and it just, and it's super talented man. Yeah. Like, he can do any voice. I think it was like, I mean, he did, let's just really quick, he did in this one, Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, Sam the Eagle, and various like animal voices. So he's like, I mean, he can just, he's so versatile, you know, mm-hmm, it's crazy. It's so incredible. But I love also the little scene where they have the blowout with Tim Curry and all of that. I love it. They like, he's like, dead Tom is dead. The other one's like, he's always been dead. That's why his name is Dead Tom. And he's crying. And then he just like throws him. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that bit at the beginning with the roll call when they're going through all the evil characters, oh, but God, they say old Tom, and then they cut to very old Tom, and he's, old Tom looked bad,
he's
enough.
Older.
Very old Tom, dead Tom. And then when they dead do Tom, the hard cut again, Kermit's like, can I see you guys in my office?
I know.
Who hired this crew?
That, it's like the one time he freaks out and it's so cute. And he like, he keeps it calm. Who the fuck are this girl? It was so funny. And you see him like his physicality too. They do just a great Kermit as well. So anyway, I think the Muppet movement in this is so good and so funny. I do agree that the writing is not as strong as some of the other ones, but I still think there are enough funny nuggets throughout that again like pull you back in. And I think when you come to kind of the end of they've had this whole battle on the island of the treasure and they're, you know, and Jim Hawkins has, you know, they're gonna capture him, he gets outnumbered, Long John Silver gets outnumbered, and they get him back on, you know, they're gonna imprison him on the boat, and he finds that he still has the keys, which like, did nobody pat the guy down? Let's pat him down. Which is, again, it's that in the source material, so it makes sense. But then they have that standoff when he's escaping. And in the book, they are actually both holding guns at each other. But in this, it's he's about to out him with the whistle or the gun. And I love that interaction. I think it's a really cool scene of this is where you really affirm, and he's said it once before when he tried to save Jim, but it's when you really affirm that he won't actually do anything to Jim. He loves him in his own way and has really kind of taken him under his wing. And then you see that reciprocated maybe for the first time from Jim of like, I do like you. I like that you took me under his wing. And that's like the picture that I showed earlier of this is, he has the note in the picture where he's like, he always loved when I was in the galley with him and we had the best conversations. Like that's that portion of the book. So I think they have a real relationship and a real friendship and love for each other. But they just don't respect what he's doing. You know, that's the thing.
We mentioned Pirates of the Caribbean earlier, and I think there's definitely some Jack Sparrow in this character or derived from this character of, yes, he is selfish and he's doing all these terrible things, but he does have a heart at the end of the day for specific people who he cares about. He's probably still going to go for treasure above all else, but I definitely think Johnny Depp and the writing team there borrowed a little bit from Long John.
Which, to be fair, like it is a kind of a common theme in in pirate films. Robert Louis Stevenson will tell you, like, he also took a lot from Robinson Crusoe, which is arguably the first real pirate book, which is actually back here as well. And that there's a like a bunch of those supposed cliches that you're used to, like treasure maps and X mark the spot, and like certain pirate tropes are from these books. And there's you know, one or two that you can point to that are the source material for all of these things that you see in all these pirate movies. And I don't know, the nerd in me thinks that's just so fucking cool.
I think the only other thing that I wanted to say in the main, in the battle at the end there, the battle looks great for the most part. And again, it is, you're looking at puppets and humans sword fighting with puppets, but they make you believe that this battle is happening with the way that they shoot it. But go figure, the only shot in the film that looks bad is, I think, when they try to do some kind of special effects with Kermit standing on his own and then doing the flip. That's the only thing in the film that looks bad. I don't know how they chose to do. Maybe it was practical. It doesn't look practical, but that's the only one where I went, don't love that.
Was that when they made the hopping mad joke? That was earlier. No, because they were like alluding to him hopping and being a frog. Anyway, that was one of my favorite jokes. They were like, he's hopping mad. Anyway. I agree. I think the effects there are like one of the weaker ones. And the way he actually also like slices up Tim Curry's coat when he gets right in front of him too, where you're like, this wouldn't be that intimidating. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's the one moment I think in all those little battles where you're like, did this really work? But then he gets outnumbered and, you know, and that totally checks out, I think. So, but I like that, you know, he gets away, but doesn't, you know, the boat sinks and he gets stranded, and you get this scene of him on the island being told all these annoying jokes and he's just rolling his eyes and eating the banana. And I just love, like, again, even just his face is barely moving and you get so much from it, I think. And I have in my notes, only Tim Curry could pull this off. Like, I'm convinced that he's the only one who could really do it.
Yeah, shouts to Tim Curry. I know he's getting up there in age. His health is declining. But like, if you ever listen to this podcast, sir, appreciate all the work you've done.
We are obsessed with you, actually. Yeah. No, he did. If y'all didn't know, he had a stroke a few years ago, but he still does a lot of voice work and a lot of charity work. So again, he's just a badass. We love him. Good job. this was a good time, I think, for me, like, because I just, again, I got a lot more appreciation for, I think, the production aspect mm-hmm. of Muppets and the performance aspect of Muppets and how, why people really love them. Cause I mean, again, my sister just slowly get me into a Muppet Christmas Carol. And I was like, why do you like this? I mean, for years I did not get it. And yeah, I think I have a much stronger appreciation for it now, but all that to say, what would you rate this at the end of the day?
Yeah, not to over-repeat anything we said earlier, but I'm in total agreement. I have such respect for the effort that goes into something like this and to the live action performers as well for embracing the camp, but knowing where to draw a line.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, even the live action stuff, the scene with Tim Curry and Jim, or I don't know why I'm doing actor and character name, but Long John and Jim sitting in the crow's nest and having that heart to heart. I think it's hard to pull off like an adult character talking to like a 12-year-old and not mm-hmm. have it be creepy. And it
just, and have it feel sincere. Yes, I yes. think that's, yeah.
And especially yeah. because you know it's kind of a villain that's having this conversation. But all that to say, outside of like some scenes, like the script probably could use a little bit of tightening in some parts. Bit. Maybe one more song, maybe a couple more jokes. The rat vacation resort thing, some of it landed for me. Some of it
worked, some of it did not. Quick. I agree, yeah. Yeah.
So... No. And I think because it's based on a book, you know where everything is sort of going. But all that to say, like, I'd still probably go 7.5. I think it's really good. It's not my favorite Muppet film. Mm-hmm. I like Christmas Carol better, but yeah, very Same. Enjoyable.
Yeah, I will say I started at a 6 when I just wrote out my notes. But in talking about it and remembering the things that I appreciate about it, I think I would raise it to like a 6.5, maybe a 7, because I do think there's a lot to appreciate here. The thing that got me while I was doing it and doing my notes, like I said, is it just felt like it could use some tightening and that it dragged a little specifically mm-hmm. where I was like, and I love this story too. I think that's the other thing for me that I was like, I love this book and I, you know, I'm ready to nerd out, and it did lose me a couple of times. But the production was really solid. So yeah, I'd go like 6.5 or 7.
Cool.
Well, guys, like we said, it's a good time. I don't know who recommended this. We have this somewhere else in our long list of who recommended what and how it won the polls and all the things, but shout out to you for making us watch this movie for the first yeah. time that neither of us had seen. So thanks for joining us, and come back next week for another Fan Jan. This one is going to be It Follows.
Spooky time.
Spooky horror flick of stuff.
STDs.
STDs really is what it is, to be honest. But yeah, so come back next week and listen to that. In the meantime,
follow us on our socials, Instagram mainly. That's where you'll find most of our polls and interactions and reels and whatnot.
Yeah, if you want to vote in these kinds of things, that's where you got to be.
Yes, if you want to be heard. And like when we post polls, unfortunately, they're only up for 24 hours. So I have had people reach out and say, "Why I don't see the polls." You kind of got to follow us and be on there, you know, once every couple days to not miss it. Unfortunately, I thought about it. I was like, we could move over to Facebook and run polls there, but it's like, I'm never on Facebook. I don't know if my friends
don't use Facebook. We'd never see it, guys. We'd never see it. See it.
But yeah, also follow at Craft World, who does all the drinks and whatnot. And you can also view the video of this podcast on Spotify now or on YouTube. Leave us some comments there if you want to see the video mm-hmm. portion and all the cool illustrations that Mackenzie showed earlier.
Don't watch and drive, though. I've seen some Please of you don't. Do it. And PSA, I don't want to get sued. Don't watch and drive. But yeah, again, thanks for joining us. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
Clink. I did an extra slurp this time.